Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Connecting Faith. Bill Arnold in today for Neil Stavem. Hope you're having a good day. Hope you had a nice weekend. It certainly was very nice weather-wise here in the upper Midwest. I think Saturday and Sunday were two of the prettiest days I can remember. Ted,
yeah,
you too?
Fantastic. Just you had to be outside.
Did you get out
and
get a little breeze on your face?
Oh, yeah. You know, did some yard work in the process, too. But
yeah,
was able to relax. Yeah, just gorgeous.
Good for you.
Soak it up.
Yeah. Do you use Bluetooth in your car? Just curious.
You know, I just was thinking about that the other day. I haven't actually done it.
Yeah, because it's kind of hit and miss for me, because Neil Stavem, the program director, called me and said, do you want to sit in the studio and interview Ray Johnston? He's written a book called Jesus Called, and he wants his shirt back.
His shirt?
Yeah.
What?
Well, that's what I heard.
Oh, okay. Right.
And I thought the guards rolled dice for that. I thought, where is that? They're not getting that back.
Right.
And then I realized he said Jesus called and he wants his church back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I assume that he uses a landline still, because that's just what he would do, I would think.
Sure.
But the subtitle is What Christians and the American Church Are Missing. And we're going to explore that with Ray in just a minute. We're going to bring him on in just a second. But he talks about in the previous decades, Americans have lost something important and are things that we couldn't afford to lose. Like in the 50s, we lost innocence. In the 60s, we lost respect for authority. Hmm. In the 70s, we lost love, even though we wrote a lot of good love songs in the 70s. In the 80s, we lost values. In the 90s, we lost faith. In the 2000s, we lost security. In the 2010s, we lost hope in the future. And that was so interesting because it was a word that's been running through my brain the last month is the word hope. Mm-hmm. Because nearly everyone that I've been talking to lately is struggling on some level with hope.
Yeah. And the world needs it. We need it.
Oh, we need it bad. So Ray is the best-selling author of a book called The Hope Quotient. His book that we're going to be discussing today is Jesus Called and He Wants His Church Back. And what Christians in the American church are missing. And I believe, Ray, you're on. You're there now, aren't you?
I am.
Yeah.
I'm right here.
Yeah. And do you remember me from three decades ago?
Oh, hey, you and Bob Stromberg were two of the funniest, most talented people we worked with, you especially.
Well, I was, not necessarily Bob, but certainly me.
Yeah, you're probably right on that. I was just trying to be nice to Bob.
Well, I appreciate that. No, we had a lot of fun back then, didn't we?
Yep, we sure did.
Yeah, and I know
your triple espresso thing. Do you still do that occasionally?
I do. I've done 3,300 performances of it.
I would say you probably have it down by now.
Well, you would think. You know, the first 2,000 shows, I had to write my lines on Stromberg's forehead. I can't even remember his name.
you know, fortunately, there's enough room there for it.
There is, and there's gotten to be more space lately, too, as well.
Yeah, I sure hope Bob isn't listening.
Oh, trust me, I'll forward this to him just so we can make sure he gets a dose of it. So, hey, congratulations on this book.
Thank you. It was interesting. I've written two books in the last 15 months. The first one was a book on hope, and that was meant to kind of comfort the afflicted. Mm-hmm. This was meant to afflict the comfortable. So it's been a totally different experience to write this.
Yeah, I read it myself, and I don't know how to get those 3 hours back. And maybe you can redeem them. Because, no, I mean, you did.
Yeah,
you did disturb me, okay? You did a nice job of disturbing me. So let's talk about, first of all, a world without Jesus, which is kind of the world we're looking at today.
Yeah, it's interesting. I call it the three circles. It's almost like we've developed a world without Jesus, church without Jesus, and Christians that take his label but don't look a lot like him.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened is, I mean, you laid out some of that chapter. I basically went, man, after working with teenagers for a million years, you realize something's been lost for seven straight decades.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is when you look at those things, you add those things together, you're going, you cannot be emotionally healthy, spiritually healthy, psychologically, relationally healthy, without innocence, without some sense of authority, without mm-hmm. love. I mean, the whole in the 1970s, Americans starving for love, have settled for sex, and it's never gotten back.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 80s, it was in the 80s, we lost values. I mean, the movie Wall Street, you know, greed is good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, check America. It's interesting. And if Christians don't think this has shaped them, check tithing records of Americans after the 1980s. We had more money and tithe less.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like these cultural trends are sweeping us up and carrying us with them.
Well, we live in a me first world. Not that we haven't in the past, but now more than ever. And that certainly yep. is creating all kinds of trouble. Because I want to have it my way.
Yep, absolutely, no question.
And I know the word narcissism has gotten to be so popular that I think they've removed it as something that's odd. Now it's just mainstream.
Oh, it is interesting. I mean, you basically go each one of these decades has a massive lifestyle. You know, it's when you lose innocence, you end up with hedonism. You know, when you lose authority, when you lose all authority, you end up basically with humanism. And when you lose love, you end up with individualism, which is just all about me. The 70s were the me decade. And at least, well, nationwide, really, in California, it is me first, which means I'll go into any bathroom I want.
Mm-hmm.
And which means if you're on the West Coast, you have a daughter, these are scary times.
Mm-hmm. There was a time
we've built the structure underneath all this.
Yeah, there was a time when if a person exposed himself to a young girl, he'd be arrested. Now, if he does it in the confines of a female bathroom, she'll be arrested.
Yeah,
for reporting him.
Yeah, no kidding.
Is common sense completely out the window?
It's brave. It's nuts. It's one of those things where you go, somebody needs to write a book on, you know, with a capital D on the cover, on discernment. I mean, we have more knowledge and less discernment than ever.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have much knowledge anymore that's of any value, unless it's God's word.
Yeah.
And I hope that's what we're going to be talking about today.
Yep.
Right, Ray?
Yep. Well, you know, it's...
Right?
Exactly. This. I'm sure we'll get there. Because this should be the single best decade we've ever had as the church. I mean, because people are starving for these seven things. I mean, they're starving for hope and faith and security and values and love. They're starving for this stuff. They know they're not going to get it any longer from our country or our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And where do you find all this stuff? I mean, innocence, that's the forgiveness of God. Authority, that's the word of God. Love, that's the love of God and his people. I mean, all of these things. It's almost like somebody set it up and just saying to the Christian church, it's time to spike it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this could be the best decade we've ever had
because
mm-hmm. we have real and not cheap, trite answers. We've got deep, honest answers for every one of these things that have been lost. The Christian church has just got to do a better job of connecting with people in our culture in order to deliver it.
Mm-hmm. Ray, I know Americans are getting fed up with Christians. I know that in the book of John, Jesus says, in this world you will have trouble, but be of good cheer. I've overcome the world. You would think Christians would be characterized as people of good cheer and people that other people would be naturally drawn to.
Yep.
Yeah. Why am I scratching my head right now, Ray? Answer that.
Oh, no. Oh, it's the lady that came up to me after church a while back, and she was mad, hopping mad. And she starts poking me in the chest, and she said, young man, which actually made my day, she said, you use entirely too much humor in your messages, and there is no place for that in the house of God.
Hmm.
And I just looked at her and said, I probably said this 100 times to people, you're just not going to like our church.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, we this is what we do. I mean, we're dead serious about the stuff that matters. But there's got to be a fundamental joy, and how have we ever lost that and made being miserable being spiritual?
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, it was interesting. We do a Thrive conference every year. We got to get you out for it sometime. It is a blast.
Ted, get my agent on the line.
Next year's Thrive conference has we cut it off at 3,500 people.
Okay,
people from all around the world. And next year's conference sold out 2 days after this year's conference. It's just is nothing like it. But part of it is this. When we put it together, we went, we went, it's going to be about three things: head, heart, and humor.
Mm-hmm.
And their Christian conferences are all about head. In other words, get a notebook, take some notes. There's conferences that are all about heart, which is worship and passion and stuff like that. Almost nobody has humor. And so we decided we would make it a third of the conference. I actually meet with the comedians and magicians at the start of the conference. And I said, look, you're not an add-on to this thing. You're one of the reasons. Most of these people, their number one need is to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And they are a third of the conference, and it's a ball. Somehow, we just lost joy, and it's like we've got these paved-over hearts, especially in church. I mean, nobody thinks church is fun.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder why attendance is down. Not that church necessarily needs to be fun, but let's celebrate the joy that's in our heart and the hope we have that we're dying to share with others.
Oh, yeah. You know what's interesting is I think attendance is down for a number of reasons on a number of fronts. But one of the reasons it's down is exactly what we're talking about. Why would anybody want to walk into a setting that made them more miserable?
Mm-hmm. And that's worthy of a nice pause.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right, Ray, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to have much more conversation on your book, Jesus Called and He Wants His Church Back. So we're going to take just a short one. It's 15 minutes after. Be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. So glad you joined us today on your lunch hour, or if you're in my business, probably your breakfast hour. Bill Arnold sitting in today for Neil Stavem, and I'm talking to Ray Johnston today. He's written a book, one of several. This one's called Jesus Called and He Wants His Church Back. And we're sort of talking about all the things that are happening in churches today and not happening in churches today. And I know, Ray, one of the things that I'm seeing more and more is people feeling more cynical towards and more judgmental towards what's going on in church. I don't know if it's my age bracket or what, but would you explain what's going on in that department?
You know, our church, I think that's our fault. And what happened is about 7-8 years ago, I was in a group in Newport Beach, in a kind of a study thing of about 8 guys. And we're just reading Acts chapter 2, asking questions about the future of the Christian church. And somebody read this verse. It said, selling their possessions and goods, they gave to anyone who had need.
Mm-hmm.
This guy went up to the board, and he just wrote the words good deeds. He said, evidently, the early church started with good deeds. 2 verses later, it says they had favor with God and all the people. Well, we don't have favor with people.
Mm-mm.
This guy wrote goodwill. And he said, it's interesting, the good deeds led to goodwill. And the very next verse says, and the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. People came pouring into that church,
mm-hmm.
and this guy wrote good news. And I sat there, and I went, oh, man, like almost every one of the 350,000 American churches, I have been delivering the good news without good deeds, so there's very little goodwill. And at that point, we had the fastest-growing church north of Los Angeles. And so I went, I literally called our staff together and I apologized. I told our church, I said, we've gotten this all wrong. And I literally thought, if this wrecks our church, we will get this right. And it fundamentally, we turned the church inside out. And we basically went, we will get this right if it sinks the church. And I've never seen anything like it. You know, for example, we shut down once a year. We interview every mayor, every principal, and everybody that works with the poor. And last year, we came up with 162 service projects. Businesses have been calling us. The local Home Depot called us. 3 other businesses called us and said, can we partner? And our church partnered with and are now leading a charge of businesses. And we served the community the entire weekend.
Hmm.
And no church, no services. And it was kind of cool. The media shows up for that and put the microphone in. One of our church members said, why are you doing this? And she said, instead of coming to church, we thought we'd go be the church.
Wow.
And I think, imagine this for a second. Imagine that every church in America did that once a year. Mm-hmm. Every single church once a year shut down, interviewed everybody that works with the poor, everybody, every mayor, every principal, unleashed people to serve. All of a sudden, in 3 to 5 years, we would be known as the people that serve the community.
Mm.
So, or another good example of how that happened is this. We have a local mall, kind of a mall of America, a mini mall of America. And we had a terrorist 4 years ago try to burn it down, set off a fire, burned about a fourth of the mall. So we met with the mall and said, who's going to be hurt? And they said, well, you know, the guys are going to be hurt, not the full-time employees. They all have insurance. The store's got insurance. It's the mostly the Hispanic day laborers, Spanish-speaking people from Mexico that are doing all the day labor stuff. They got no insurance, no nothing. So we went to our church and said, we're going to take a second offering, and we're going to try to raise $30,000 and help some of these folks. Well, our people gave $70,000. Hmm. So we met with the mall and the mayor and said, we want to help these people. And for the next 18 months, we kept all those people. We paid rents, paid to keep light on, heat on, air conditioning on in the summer. We kept their kids in school. And this year, what happened is the mall, we do stuff with the mall all the time now. So the mall contacted us and said, hey, we have a free store next to Nordstrom's. Would you like to use it during Christmas? So we set up for all moms, our children's ministry set up a drop-in shop. Drop your kids off, go shopping, and for 3 hours, and we will run a program for your kids, and it's absolutely free for stressed out moms. Hmm. And then we set up a free gift wrapping thing in the middle of the mall. We'll wrap all your presents for free. And if you want to make a donation, we're not keeping a dime of it. All goes to these five community causes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened is the minute word of this got out, the Sacramento Atheist Organization and the Sacramento LGBT community called the mall to protest us being invited into the mall mm-hmm. and partnering with the mall. The mall said to them, hey, when we got firebombed, we never heard from you.
Mm-hmm.
These people are the people that serve our community, and we're honored to be partnered with them.
Wow.
And you know, what's interesting is that would never have been said 9 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the early church did, I mean, they led with good deeds. That leads to openness to goodness. It is hard to argue with that.
Boy, is it ever.
And I think without that as a base, without that as a foundation, all we are, we're all talk, and nobody respects that.
Hmm. Sounds like your church family is pouring themselves out as an offering to others and people into the community and putting the flesh of Jesus into the community every day.
I would say we're at least staggering down a road, hopefully going that direction.
Yeah, sure sounds that way.
But it's getting better every year. And the really cool thing is this. We had an African-American pastor in town. And he and I have become good friends. And one time he said to me, I live in the suburbs, he lives in the city. And he basically said, hey, look, I don't think you really get what life in my part of town's like. And I was like, what do you mean? And he said, like, the schools in my area aren't like the schools in your area. And I went, well, that couldn't possibly true. The government's so competent, they would never let that happen. So I went on, he said, let me take you on a drive. So we went on about a 3-hour tour of Sacramento, and I was blown away. I mean, just shocked. I mean, schools without playground equipment. The more we drove, the madder I got. I went, it's not fair that no kid's starting line should be behind any other kid just because of their race or address.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went, what do we do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the government's not going to fix it because they're the geniuses that let this thing occur.
Mm-hmm.
So we went, we're going to have to do it ourselves. So we have been shutting down our churches about every 18 months, renting Arco Arena where the Kings play,
mm-hmm.
and doing a massive weekend worship service together and raising money to rehab inner city schools. And what's happened as a result of that is we have about 300 people now tutoring inner city kids in reading because we found out that the number one predictor of future lives of crime is, get this, is third grade reading scores.
Serious?
Absolutely. It's shocking. California uses third grade reading levels to predict how many beds they're going to need for future prisons. And if you can catch a kid up reading level wise, then, which you can catch almost any kid up in about 18 months. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden, this kid's future starts looking like a whole different ballgame. And so what happened is we've got hundreds of people now flooding the lives of people. Every time we do one of these, you know, either events or we shut down, what it does is it gets all of the people in church connected to the community. And our prayer isn't this is a one-shot deal. We want them to connect to the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm. Wow. All right. I'm talking to Ray Johnston. He has written a book called Jesus Called and He Wants His Church Back. We've got a couple copies we can give away to the first several callers. So I think we'll put your name in a drawing to win the book. But we have a pastor on the line right now who might be able to field one of your questions about something that's going on in your church that you're struggling with or something that you want to ask him specifically. We just have a couple minutes, Ray, before we go to a hard break, which means I have no control over it. You'll just go away. But I'm curious as to what happens when our attention spans are what they are, and we go into church nowadays, and most of Jesus' parables were a minute to 3.5 minutes, and we're sitting down listening to a 41-minute sermon, and we're going, I can't stay focused.
Well, if you're talking about messages, something needs to happen about every 2 minutes in a message to get people's attention back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, we prepare our messages in groups. So every Wednesday at 11 o'clock, the pastors in our campuses, we all gather, we all prep the message. Then we deliver it, we ask the question, there's a live air and there's dead air. Where's the alive air? Where's the dead air? But on this kind of stuff, when people are coming to church, man, they are giving us the gift of an hour to an hour and 15 minutes, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And they get beat up during the week. Our goal ought to be they walk out of there spiritually recharged.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're asleep, that doesn't happen.
That's true. But is it your job? Shouldn't we show up with our sleeves rolled up, saying I'm here to serve, versus what do you have for me? How should people think about church?
Boy, what I would say is this: church ought to, number one, it ought to recharge your spiritual batteries. It's a huddle where you get. Well, I would say the worship service in the church should reconnect me to God and recharge my spiritual batteries. Because if my spiritual batteries are on empty, I'm in real trouble. Mm-hmm. Nothing works if the batteries aren't charged. And so I'd say this: I'd say my church has got to recharge my spiritual batteries. Now it's also a place where I connect with people. Discover life mission, we team up and reach our world, all of that kind of stuff. But fundamentally, it has got to recharge my spiritual batteries. And if that's not happening, then I've got to figure out other ways to get those recharged, because nobody runs well running on empty.
Yeah, good point. All right, we're going to take a little break here. We're talking to Ray Johnston today, the book he's written called Jesus Called and He Wants His Church Back. If you've got questions, let us know on the other side of the break, and we will do our very best to answer them. This is Bill Arnold sitting in for Neil Stavem, who, in his opinion, is doing a better-than-average job. We're just going to take a very short break and be right back. Thanks for joining us today on Connecting Faith.
Knock that off, you two. It's time for church.
We're not going to church today.
What? You give me one good reason.
It's Saturday.
Oakley-dokley-doo.
Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Bill Arnold and today for Neil Stavem. And then, of course, with the Flanders from The Simpsons. Who doesn't love that, you know? I love when Homer decided he was not going to go to church anymore. And Marge said to him, Homer, have you lost your faith? And she said, no. He said, no. But what if we've picked the wrong religion and each week we're just making God matter?
I like the one where the Flanders, their quote, Christian neighbors, are away for a week.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, where you been? And Flanders goes, oh, we've been at a church camp for a week learning how to be more judgmental.
And that is exactly the way the world looks at Christians. And I love some of this device you've used in your book. And the book I'm talking about is Jesus Called and He Wants His Church Back. And you've got a scripture passage, and then you've got first hallucinations, which I think is I love the opposite negative ploy. For example, Matthew 4:4 says, people do not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. And First Hallucinations 13:16 says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word sat there as an unopened app on your home screen. Because everybody's
That's
got
right.
the Bible downloaded on their smartphone, but how often are we opening it and reading it?
That's exactly right. So it was interesting. We, a few years ago, we wanted to up our people's re-engagement spiritually on everything.
Mm-hmm.
And matter of fact, your listeners are welcome to this. It's absolutely free. We got up in church and we said to our folks, hey, look, we are going to shoot 5-minute morning devotionals. And it's actually 3 to 5 minutes. And Monday through Friday, we're going to text it to you. So we got the text site, John 3:16, JN 3:16, or what is it, 56316. And we said all you have to do is text the word refuel to 56316. And every morning at 7:01 every morning, you'll hear from God. And we're bombarded with stuff. We're constantly trying to figure out how do you get encouraging content into people. So right now, I think there's 50 to 60,000 people around the world who get that thing every morning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a blast because I used to think there's got to be other ways these days to deliver the truth to people.
Mm-hmm. Here's another hallucination. First Hallucination 7:7, which is regarding unresolved conflicts. As much as you can, live at peace with all people. And when you are unable, live at a distance. You shouldn't be laughing at that, Ray. You wrote it, you know.
No kidding.
Must be my delivery.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that would be a given.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
all right. But we have a problem with people, and people seem to show up at churches, so we have a problem with churches.
That's right. Oh, and fundamentally, I'll give you an example. About 2 years ago, I got a phone call from a buddy of mine. He said, hey, what are you doing on whatever the date was? And I said, I'm not sure. He said, I got 2 tickets to the Masters golf tournament. Do you want to go with me?
Huh. My answer would be yes.
Let me pray about it. Yes,
yeah, yeah.
I'm in. So have you been?
I have not, but I'd like the number of your friend.
Stunning.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'll give
yeah.
it. It's stunning. And we show up to this amazing event. It's the most amazing golf tournament I've ever been to. Well, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Sporting event. I walk up, and there's probably 30 to 40,000 people kind of streaming through these gates. And out front, there's a circle around a guy, and nobody's going with about 150 feet of this guy, and he's standing on a little box, and he's got a megaphone, and he is screaming his head off, and he has a sign that he's holding above him, and the sign says, the wages of sin is death. And he is literally screaming at everybody going by, telling them they're going to hell, and the flames of hell are going to eat, all of this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And people are avoiding this guy like the plague. So I go in. 5 hours later, I come back out. And he's still there, still screaming, still holding his sign. And nobody's gone anywhere near this guy, I'm assuming, for 5 hours. So I thought, okay, I'm in. So I walk right up to the guy. I get about 6 inches away from this guy. So I kind of get too close. And I just say, hey, man, I got a question. And can you just stop for just a second? I just want to ask you a question. And he just kept screaming. Wouldn't even make eye contact. And it was like Children of the Corn.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally said, hey, look, I yell, hey, I just had one question. He says, he wouldn't stop looking. And so I finally went, well, I give up. I walked away. What's interesting is if he had said, yeah, what do you want? I would have said, you know what? We're probably on the same team at some levels. And this verse you got, the wages of sin is death. The rest of that verse says, but the free gift of God is eternal life in Jesus Christ our Lord. If you're going to put a verse up, for God's sake, put the whole verse up.
Mm-hmm.
But I walked away from that, and I stood at a distance. I watched all these really happy, fun people walking in, and I watched this one angry, judgmental guy turning people off on the outside. And I literally went, man, a lot of Christians don't look much like Jesus, live much like Jesus, love much like Jesus, or lead much like Jesus. And maybe fundamentally, that's the real problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ray,
unchurched people flock to Jesus, and they avoid Christians in the church like a plague.
Right. Yeah, that's a big problem. Let's talk about safety and fear. This is a big one.
Oh, yeah.
And this is addressed in your book. And playing it safe is the most dangerous place for people to be.
Absolutely. The whole last third of the book is really the bulk of the book. And it basically is meet the Jesus who said, I want to release you from fear. Meet the Jesus who says, you know, you're better off dead. Come and die. Mm-hmm. Meet the Jesus who said, you know, I have given you gifts. I want you to serve. And you start going, why is it that people don't share their faith, don't get involved? It's because we have a new idol in America. Matter of fact, we have a new idol in California. I think I'll let it bother everybody in your area. And it's the idol of safety.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the dad who said to me, we take 1,000 teenagers to Mexico every year. And it's the dad who said to me, I'm thinking about letting my daughter go, but can you guarantee me it will be safe?
Mm-hmm.
And I actually wrote a whole thing in there. We are the most seat-belted, airbag, peanut-avoiding, gluten-free, bike-helmeted, sunscreen-slathering, password-protected generation in history.
Mm-hmm.
And all it's done is made everybody afraid of everything.
Right.
And so most people, they don't serve because it might not be safe. They don't Christians tip instead of tithe because that might not be safe. They don't take a stand. They don't share their faith. They never do anything exciting because it might not be safe. And then I went on and said, plan it safe. Here's what plan it safe will get you. It shrinks our lives. It shrinks our faith. It shrinks our impact. It shrivels up God. And so we've ended up with a shrunken view of God. And it shrinks our entire future, and then we die, and we're going to spend all of eternity wondering why in the world did I never go for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am with you completely on this one, Ray, because it's and I don't like the words comfort zone, and I think those are tired cliches at times, but there is certainly something within all of us that we should encourage each other to say, what big thing are you praying for?
Absolutely.
How are you dreaming bigger than, you know, where if
yep.
God doesn't get involved in this project of yours, it's a disaster because I see what's going on in the world and the utter rejection of Jesus in the public place. And I think we have to start getting stronger, not weaker.
Oh, yeah. And I'd say for every single person listening, I think that every person on the planet and certainly every Christian should be asking one question. And here's the question they need to ask. What great thing am I living to make happen? That's it. What great thing am I living to make happen?
Be more specific about that, Ray, because it confused me. You confused me just a little bit.
In other words, here's what I'd say is we have a pastor.
Dumb it down for me.
I'm one of four senior pastors on our staff, and one of the guys is from Belfast, Ireland, and we're preaching together, and he stopped and he put a picture of Johnny Ives, Apple's designer,
mm-hmm.
on the screen. And he said, when Johnny Ives was asked, when you design something, what do you think? And he said, I don't think about design. I think about purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, only until I have figured out exactly what purpose I want this to accomplish. Then after I've fine-tuned its purpose, then what I do is I design it and I make it real. So I stopped him. I said, we're preaching together, really side by side. I said, are you telling me that every single person here, God had a purpose for them or more than one purpose and figured that out before he ever designed them? And he said, not only am I saying that, he said, I am saying that everybody is in this generation in their geography on purpose. And God has a purpose for every person in here. And one of the things I'm asking people all the time is, you know what? You need to figure this out. What great thing am I living to make happen? Mm-hmm. I have friends that have a lot of money. And if they ever got more excited about what they were making happen than the next thing they were going to buy, the world would be a different place.
Yeah, good point.
And sometimes you team up with people. Sometimes a great thing happening is a small thing. But the deal is this. I believe this. The minute something comes into my life that could be a great thing to make happen, fear will try to block it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do not fear. That phrase in the Bible 300-something times.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, about a year and a half ago, I had just raised millions of dollars in our church to make some stuff happen, and we gave half of it away. And which meant I had talked about money for about 6 weeks in a row. And you know how popular that makes you.
Mm-hmm.
So I get a phone call from a buddy of mine who works in Cambodia, and we work together. The two towns this guy works within Cambodia, the 100% of the girls were trafficked in each town. Every single girl was sex trafficked. And we've been working there now for about 6 years. This guy lives there. It's cut it by 50%. And he called me and said, a weird thing just happened. The general over all trafficking called me and said, I want to put a SWAT team together and do some real raids because the police here are so corrupt. We haven't arrested anybody in 10 years. He said, we're going to put a SWAT team together of some Westerners that you trust, some Cambodians that I trust, and we'll actually make a real difference. And he said, but it could have cost $250,000. Do you know anywhere we can get that kind of money fast? Well, this guy calls me and says, can you make this happen? Mm-hmm. And I actually said to this guy on the phone, I said, you know, I'm really sorry. I just talked about money for 6 weeks. If I talk about money one more time, I'm just going to,
yeah.
I said, it just doesn't feel safe now.
Yeah.
So the guy says, well, then we'll see if we can find it some other way. The next day I meet with my staff and I tell them about the conversation, and our whole staff looks at me like, what cold-hearted jerk would turn that down? And I said, yeah, that'd be me.
That'd be Ray.
So we went, let's raise it on Christmas Eve. Christmas Eve was about 30 days away.
Mm-hmm.
So we got up on our Christmas Eve services. I told the story I just told, and I said, we are going to try to raise $250,000. Our people did not give $250,000. They did give $400,000.
Wow.
On Christmas Eve. We didn't give a dime of it. It all went there. And there have now been somewhere between 400 and 420 girls rescued, 70 guys now arrested and in jail. And the whole movement to put these people out of business is mushrooming. And I'm sitting here going, tonight there will be hundreds of girls that aren't abused, some as young as 4 years old.
Mm.
And there will be all kinds of bad guys who can never hurt girls again. And it almost didn't happen for one reason, me.
You,
because I was letting fear control me.
Yeah, you were going to maybe play it safe. Matter of fact, he let you off the hook. And he said, well, I guess I'll go find it somewhere else. And then till you mentioned it at the staff meeting the next day. Interesting.
You know what? That's exactly. I mean, I think if you're a human being, our natural inclination is to play it safe. I just can't find any verse in the Bible where Jesus says, come, follow me, stay in the boat.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't either. But once you start not playing it safe, you're going to be confronted with that word obstacles. And obstacles are difficult and challenging, and nobody likes them. Let's talk about obstacles.
Oh, no kidding. One of the things they have is, well, here's what I'd say about obstacles. We went to build our church in Granite Bay. Now, I'm not sure what it's like in your region, but then in California, you want to build anything, you get attacked, you get sued. I mean, our church literally got picketed and sued, and I got sued, and we had to have private security just to build a church in our town. And it was one of those things. And I remember basically going, I got Nehemiah chapter 2, and I put this in the shower. So it's every morning, the God of heaven will give us success. We, his servants, will arise and build. And what I realized is this, going through that for a year and a half, I mean, I would get up to preach. People would be picketing us, people yelling out occasionally. I would be getting videotaped where they were looking at stuff to sue me over.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our guys coming in goes, your threat level's orange now. We're going to put security in front of your house. I'm going, I'm a threat level. And what I realized is this. My daughter Leslie came home one day and said, what's the most important thing a leader does? And I said, that's easy. The single most important thing any human being does, and if they think about it long enough, they'll come to the same conclusions. The single most important thing anybody says, make sure they stay encouraged. Because if I'm not encouraged, if I'm not encouraged, I'm not going to have hope. I'm not going to have faith. I'm not going to overcome obstacles. I am more likely to quit. Discouragement is the anesthetic that the devil uses on somebody just before he reaches in and carves out their heart and gets them to quit on their life, quit on their marriage, or quit on whatever it is.
Yeah.
And the most important thing, as a matter of fact, I'll bet it's why people tune into your program, is because fundamentally they're going, you know what, this is part of the ways I stay encouraged. And if you're listening, keep tuning in. I mean,
yeah,
whatever you do to stay encouraged, it's the most important thing about you.
That, and I might say something amusing. That's the other reason.
Hey, no, that was a given.
Yeah, that's a given. All right, in chapter 10 of your book, Stop Thinking You Don't Matter, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, you do matter, and Ray's going to tell you why. You're listening to Connecting Faith, Bill Arnold in for Neil Stabenow. We'll be right back. Connecting Faith, Bill Arnold in for Neil Stabenow. Today, talking to Ray Johnson, and we are talking about his new book, Jesus Called and He Wants His Church Back. And chapter 10 says, stop thinking you don't matter, because you do. Jesus was trying to get something to those disciples and all of us who would come after them. Stop being intimidated by what you don't have. Stop thinking you don't have what it takes. Stop thinking you don't matter. Start serving. Those are good words, Ray. I mean, even from you, that surprises me.
You need to get out more.
I don't get out much.
Most of church is a spectator sport, unfortunately. And a few people lead while people spectate. And which somehow communicates to people most of their Christian life is spent spectating. And I wanted to write a chapter basically that says, hey, your life's too short to waste it.
Mm-hmm.
And in that chapter, I actually put 7 ways to rediscover a fresh vision from God. Because actually, everybody should have some fresh vision, which is, this is how I matter, where I matter. And it can be a routine thing. It was funny. This happened 2 days ago. We have a girl in our church named Brooke. She's in 8th grade. Great parents and good family friends of ours. It's a really classy, fun 8th grade kid. And her parents said, hey, your 8th grade birthday, it's a big deal. It's your 13th birthday. What do you want to do? And she said, I would like to get a group of my friends. I would like to go to San Francisco to the Tenderloin Interest, and I would like to serve the poor with my friends. That's what I want to do on my birthday. Mm. And that's exactly what she did. And I've got a picture of she and all her friends serving. And she posted this. She said, I found that in life, serving others brings you more joy than serving yourself. The way you make others who are in need of help feel is not worth not celebrating myself. Because shining the light of Christ to people that are broken makes me more happy on my birthday than anything else I could have done. I'm so blessed to be surrounded with some great friends and here at the Tenderloin, serving here for the third time. And I'm sitting there going, it's an 8th grade girl. I'll bet she will never forget that birthday.
Ray, don't make me tear up. You're making me tear up.
Oh, gosh. Hey, if you saw the picture of this kid, she's spectacular. She's a spectacular kid.
My gosh, that is so strong.
And it's that sort. But it was funny. I watched this happen. Our Thrive, we do a compassion moment at the Thrive conference every year.
You mean that one I'm getting hired to come to? Is that the one?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay,
yep.
Good.
Hey, you
all
know
right.
What? I think we have $40 set aside. We'll get you on the plane.
Wow, I'm getting a raise.
A year ago, we had a gal come in to give her testimony. There's St. John's Women's Shelter in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. Gets women and children off the street and restores them like nothing I've ever seen. And so we lied to this gal in Jesus' name. We told her, hey, we'd like you to come and give your testimony about what being in that shelter's meant to you, because she went there, met Christ, has been fully restored, got her first job, and walks 3 hours a day to and from her job.
Mm-hmm.
And so we told her, hey, Friday night, you're just going to give a 5-minute testimony of what this has meant to you. And what we didn't tell her is this. Friday morning, we got up in front of the entire convention, told her story, and said, we are going to take an offering this morning, and we're going to try to raise enough money to lease her a car. And what happened? And so what happened? We took this offering. Well, good night. People gave $19,200 in the offering. So we called Future Ford. The guy goes to Bayside. We called Future Ford, and we bought her a brand new car. and they sold it at cost. And then we brought her out on stage. The car's on the car's on the floor. It's covered up, so you can't tell us there. And I said, "Hey, would you just share what was your life like before you went to St. John's?" And she looks at 3,500 Christian leaders, totally not intimidated, and she says, "My life sucked." She goes, "I was a meth addict, lost all my family, lost all my friends, and almost died. That answers your question. My life sucked." And so we said, "Well, we chipped in and wanted to do something for you, and we are so thrilled with what God's done." And we said, "We got you." And the head of Future Forward came out and gave her a keys. She fell apart on the stage. Mm. 3,500 people gave her this standing ovation. The car gets unwrapped. I mean, she's a basket case. People are cheering. And we said, "By the way, you all gave so much money. Here's your keys to your car. It is fully paid off. We also paid off your insurance and taxes because we wanted to one-up Oprah. So we paid all your taxes on this car, and all your insurance for the next 3 years is fully paid up. We had some money left over, so here's a $750 gift card. And we had some money left over, so we said to the head of St. John's, here's a $5,000 check for St. John's Shelter, and we love what you guys are doing." And it was I watched this, and I went, I've never seen people do a five-minute standing ovation where they're cheering and crying at the same time. Mm. And the dominant emotion in that room was joy.
Yeah.
It was really interesting.
I feel joy listening to the story, Ray.
You know what? I feel joy telling her again. I mean, and then as she's driving out of the parking lot that night with the woman that led her to Christ who runs the shelter, she stopped the car on the way out of the parking lot. She turned to the woman and she said, "Do you know, this is the first time in 10 years that I've had a car that I wasn't sleeping in as well."
Mm.
I just go, people, life's too short to waste on not making stuff like that happen. Which means you can go serve anywhere you want today. If we get out of our ruts, and it's going to take some guts. And that's why I wrote this chapter, you know, 7 ways to rediscover God's fresh vision for your life. And read it. Take those 7 steps because everything can be different.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly is an exciting bunch of stories you've told and an exciting church that you are shepherding. And I know that it's going to cause a lot of people to think outside of their comfort zone, as much as I don't like that expression, but it is true. You know, it's what you are doing and what you're encouraging people to do is, and this book has done a really nice job of it. It was an easy read for me, and I don't read well and I don't comprehend very well. So I have to say it was quite enjoyable, right?
And the feeling same about the conversation. Well, you're just fun to hang out with.
I don't know if I'll go there that far, but you know, it's where I'm at right now is to say this is should be exciting for people because our joy is complete in Christ, and we need to say take the gifts God's given us and go use them in creative ways and get out of our safety zones because that's where the exciting things happen. I mean, just the listeners picturing this woman receiving this car is just thrilling. It's thrilling for me.
Yeah, and I feel the same way.
We're just doing the next right thing. Just try to serve others and make a difference for Christ. And this is what I'm reading in this book. And it's really, really entertaining. Really good.
Hey, thank you. Hey, it's been great to be with you. By the way, one other thing to add. Do we have 1 minute?
Yeah, we exactly 1 minute.
Good. I grew up in a executive, jet-set, atheist, alcoholic, rageaholic family. I met Christ at age 18. And my mom and dad were divorced. Every single person in my family history is divorced for 150 years, every single one. Carol and I just celebrated 32 years of marriage. Mm. And so if anybody's listening that sort of doubts the power of God, when somebody starts saying, "Oh, I just don't think Jesus, the Bible, and the church make that big of a difference," all I have to do is take out my family history and say, you know what, it sure does in my life. He broke 150 years of past patterns.
Yeah.
And I basically wrote this book to say, get connected to Jesus who has enough power to change everything.
Yeah. Ray, that's awesome. Been talking to Ray Johnston. He's wrote a book called Jesus Called and He Wants His Church Back. We'll put all that up on our website. You can go listen to this conversation again or pass it on to a friend. Go to myfaithradio.com and then go to Connecting Faith and you'll find it. Ray, it's been a pleasure. Great to talk to you. Everyone, have a great day.
Great being with you.